Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this week it is Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast. An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
T's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream Undead, a podcast of Joy 94.9 with Sonia the Screamer and Clay Talks.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream Undead. And kind of wish we were dead. No.
No, we do
not. No, well, we do not.
No,
cut that out.
It's not us we wish we were dead. So this
Punch podcast, a Nazi.
Well, oh, yeah. I'm not going to comment on that.
You don't like the punch and answer?
I don't like the idea that violence is a way to solve anything.
It could be a metaphorical punch.
It could be.
Punch can be a drink.
I don't think it's a metaphor, though.
Okay. All right. Hashtag dystrumpia.
It's interesting. I will point out that the fact that I don't think of violence as a way to solve anything, he says on the horror program.
Yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Dystrumpia.
Dystrumpia, which is, this is a podcast for what you can do to find out how the world's going to be in about a year's time.
Well, how the world is already going in some places.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, that's what I mean. This is the we're working that path towards what it's going to be in a year.
And we're looking at dystopical science fiction. Usually science fiction.
Science fiction, there's plenty of horror in it usually though as well, the horror of humanity. Mm. But this, by far, is my favourite genre. I love dystopias.
Why? What is dystopia? Who knows?
A dystopia is the opposite of a utopia, which is the utopia being the perfect society. Dystopia is a failed society where people are generally oppressed, and it's a very common part of it anyway.
Dystopia, yeah. I think I guess the problem with that, the idea of utopia, the idea of dystopia is made up as a construct by white culture, Western culture, viewpoints and ideals. Mm-hmm. For some people in the world, it is a dystopical now.
Oh, I'm quite comfortable with that, definitely. Yeah. Especially if you're living in America at the moment. No, I shouldn't say especially.
Well, parts of America. Parts like we mean in parts of the socioeconomic environment, whatever it might be, or if you're a person of colour, or if you are someone who is of an immigrant background, which is probably everyone there, pretty much.
Trump, for example.
For example, yes. And of course, for people who are indigenous, there's so much happening, and we are seemingly, it's a dystopical now.
Absolutely. And it's not the future, though. so.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah.
No, I know. Look, you are correct.
I am always correct. Yeah. No, it's not
I know.
True. It's not true.
Correct you right behind my mind. No. All right, so we've got a list of all these dystopian films. Some we know lots about and some are just ones we are now interested in after hearing about them. So the biggest one that people are talking about in connection to Trump is 1984. Which George Orwell's classic novel, and where the phrase the Orwellian-esque society or that sort of thing came from, where because George Orwell, in a number of his works, talked about how society can fail.
And I mean, that's where the term Big Brother is watching you comes from. And of course, we all know where that led to. Well, what is now? You know, we're being watched all the time. We're being watched and analysed. We're being watched right now. We're being recorded because we cannot be trusted. Because someone has decided in the hierarchical, you know, power of things, in the hierarchical environment, that there will always be people that you have to control and always people that will be out of control. So you have to try and control them too. That's and pretty much a prim
usually, usually those people who need to be controlled are women, people of colour, and not white people.
Yeah, pretty much. Not white people and not male white people usually.
Occasionally queer people, depending on the country. But
I mean, 1984 is a book, first published back in 1949. This novel is, it's most miserable read you can have, but incredibly powerful read as well. And certainly, like even when you analyze it, even when you up to a level, even as a kid, I think I read it when I was about 10. I didn't understand it, but it gave me nightmares just from that level of my youthnessness. And it's been so influential.
Absolutely. And like it has, I mean, it's really fed into a lot of dystopias and other novels as well. But a lot of people are actually saying that a better allegory for the current situation is A Brave New World. A lot better than
Aldous 1984. Huxley.
Aldous Huxley.
So why are they saying that? I mean, I'm not such a... I don't know enough about Brave New World.
I don't know that much about it. So, no, I'm not... I have never actually seen A Brave New World. So... It's in a futuristic totalitarian utopia society. Babies are created through genetic engineering. Everyone has a predestined place in society, and their minds are combined to follow a condition to follow the rules. A tragic outsider jeopardizes the status quo.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was published before George Orwell's experience, you know, 1984, 1932. I mean, reproductive technology, things like that are really, and psychological manipulation, on point. Absolutely. Marketing today as we see it, and the management of people, and particularly when it comes to reproduction, is certainly been with us. You know, the rights of women's bodies, the right of women to control their bodies, abortion rights and things like that is certainly, you know, real life real life news, real life experiences, and I mean, I can't argue with that. But and with some of the other work he later did, like Island and back in 62, looking at replicants and, you know, androids and the cloning issue. Yeah, Aldous Huxley, a pretty amazing person, you know.
It was the Island, the basis for that, the movie The Island.
So look, another great writer. But I think with the thing with George Orwell would have to be his experience and real life experience, not taken away from Aldous's life experiences. I'm sure he had a lot of things to feed, you know, his stories and where they came from. But for Orwell, it was because he was out there on the front lines during the Civil War, Spanish Civil War. Mm-hmm. So he actually fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, really?
Yes, so he was a very interesting man, very socialist sort of background, but also a colonizing background, like British India and things like his experiences and background there. You know, he was in Burma, he down and out in Paris, London and Paris, great book. So he experienced homelessness. He experienced poverty. He could see what that was doing to people and to societies and communities. And of course, the Spanish Civil War was a very big life experience for him. He didn't stay very long, but you know, he hung out with people like Henry Miller.
Yeah, dining with Henry Miller in Paris. Mm,
yeah, and I believe he fought on the side of the Independent Labour Party, I think, or more of the sort of communist side than the anarchist side or as such. Although I think he was probably ended up being more of an anarchist, I think, in a way. But don't judge me on that. I'm not an expert in his life story. But he joined PUM, which is really interesting. Mm. Look, the Spanish Civil War had a massive effect on the future of Western civilization, and all of us today wouldn't be here because of what happened there. A little war, they called it, but a massively important war where people were divided. It was a fascist war. Mm-hmm. It was the first real fascist war, and where Hitler and Mussolini gave troops and armaments and even bombed Spain on the side of the aristocratic Catholics, you know, right-wing military coup that it became. So if anyone's looking for, I think, someone who understood
what it was to
what nationalism and what, and, yeah, you know, what these things do and what right-wing and left-wing politics can do, definitely George Orwell. And then, of course, he fed that into things like Homage to Catalonia, and which is about his time in Spain, fighting the good fight. And, of course, 1984, which came out in 1949. So I think this is why this book is so important. Mm. And, of course, everything that has spiraled from it. So, yeah, I totally get why people are calling it
1984.
Now in dystopian times. And
I think we can even give it a minor shout out to Animal Farm as well.
Oh, God. More so, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Well, certainly the pig part. But, yeah. That examination of class and power. Mm. And that has one of my favorite quotes in any book, which is all animals are created equal. Some are more equal than others.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? Four legs good, two legs better. So on.
And it's a great book.
What a man. What an amazing, gifted artist George Orwell was.
Sticking my teacher hat on for one second. I'm just glad. 1 second. Yep. Animal Farm is a great book because kids can access it at a certain level and then adults at another level. And eventually those two come together. So,
Have you seen the animated film?
Fabulous. Yeah. I prefer the book. But
the book's great. Yeah. But yes, look, it's, you know, the first publication, it says Animal Farm, A Fairy Story by George Orwell.
I don't think it was a fairy story.
No, published in 1945, so just
at the end of the war.
Within days, pretty much.
That's a great cover.
Oh, it's a great cover. I just love that.
You can't see it, of course, but it's green and brown. Brown.
That's great. Yeah. Grey and green.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's that very 1940s style, post-fascist, post-imperialistic style. Yeah. Look, it's about dictatorship, brutal dictatorship, but animals are the allegory, animals are the motif for that.
Absolutely.
So, and on a farm, you know, it's amazing. So,
hence the name.
Frightening.
In researching this, I also found another book I haven't read, but I'm actually quite interested in reading, called Article 5, which is about more related to the reproductive rights we were talking about.
Okay.
But a young adult dystopian novel, Article 5, Simmons's debut novel, and that's Kristen Simmons, was released to critical acclaim in 2012, demonstrating that the genre is alive and well. The US is run by an ultra-conservative federal bureau for reformation, and a child born out of wedlock is technically illegal. A fight for survival ensues with scenes of torture and darkness aplenty. And this is what's going to happen, is that people are going to be not necessarily having illegal babies, but illegal abortions and which are so dangerous and harmful and fatal. So,
It's just pushing the limits to, you know, the common decency to fellow humans, to each other. The humanity will be lost, you know, because so many things are at the moment are being attacked and pulled apart. In the US, I know that's not us. And I've had people say, why are you talking about the American politics all the time? Because what's it going to do with us? Because we live in a global community. Economically, it's going to affect us. politically, ethically, philosophically, psychologically, right now, it's affecting us in a very deep and disturbing way, I believe. It's not just because social media is full of it, someone said to me. But yes, it is. But we need to remember how these things can turn into something really hideous. And we should all realize that these are the very things that turned into one of the most disturbing times of human history, which was the Second World War, as it was called.
And Nazi Germany generally focused on the effects on the Jews, but people of color, queer people.
Well, let's look at the triumvirate. Let's look at the excess of evil, the excess of power, which was Japan, which was a fascist nation. Still has a lot to answer for that. And the effects of that hasn't been righted, as far as I'm aware, as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion. But also, we've got Mussolini's fascist Italy. In fact, Italy was the most fascist in some ways, because Adolf Hitler was influenced by Mussolini. He prized Mussolini. He said Mussolini was one of his all-time favourites. And I think people say the same thing in Australia. John Howard was very popular with the Brexit exit people, including that heinous man who is pretty much running the White House policy, Bannon. And he mentions John Howard's policy about immigration and refugee banishment and Manus Island and Christmas Island, and Nauru. Disgusting. Australia cannot, in my opinion, sit by and go, well, the Americans have fucked things up, because we've been an influence on that, and we haven't been accounting, we haven't been acknowledging that. We need to acknowledge our own faults and how we are part of what's happening right now in the US.
Yes.
Actually,
we need to go back further in history to start with those acknowledging of our faults. But hey,
yes, I know. Yeah, so. But back to the sci-fi and dystopia.
Look, a lot of posters around, no, I shouldn't say posters, banners or
placards,
yep, around during the marches were A Handmaid's Tale is not a how-to guide. So
scary.
And I absolutely love this novel. And
Margaret Atwood, amazing.
She's just
amazing,
incredible
woman.
And my favorite novel is Oryx and Crake, which I won't go into right now, but that's another Margaret Atwood dystopia future. So
I mean, this is the book you gave to me for a present for Christmas.
Yeah,
actually didn't give me a Christmas present this year.
I know, sorry.
Okay. That's when we were friends.
Yeah, no, that, and I just forgot.
And I mean, that was touching. Disturbing. Yeah. You gave me that.
It seemed like the right type of present for you, though.
It is. Yeah. It's look. It's definitely. I highly recommend it. It's considered speculative fiction, but
She doesn't like the word sci-fi. She likes speculative, is quite, actually makes sense.
And it came out in 1985. Perfect, because the Reagan era, the Thatcher era. Mm-hmm. Similar echoes of time that we're seeing now, I guess.
So if you don't know it, it's the story of Fred, who is a sexual slave, in that she is raped once a week in order to try and impregnate her to get, because she's one of the few women in the world who can still, sorry, few women in this society of Gilead who can carry a baby. So she is used as it is a sexual slave. So, and she has other duties within the house, but her main one is to get raped once a week in order to have a baby. So she ends up falling in love with the limo driver, but the higher rich people are the ones who are given these women. And so we see Serena Joy and the Commodore, and they're trying to have a baby. Serena Joy being a former television star in the pre-Gilead world.
It's very Old Testament. If you know your Old Testament, your Christian Old Testament, you'll see this is very similar in many of the constructs, and they do run it, don't they? Run Gilead is based, their idea of culture is based on the Old Testament, which is a vile,
absolutely,
a vile document
of
hatred, of... don't get me started on Christianity, but anyway.
No, we won't. But the scenes in the book where queer people are nailed to the wall and with gender crimes written across their chests because of gender betrayal, actually, I think it is.
Very similar to sex crime in 1984.
Yeah. And the, even the name of Fred, it actually comes from the owner of her being Fred. So she is of Fred.
So it's very much like the oppression and slavery of people of color, well, African-American people in the U.S. at the time of slavery. You wonder why a lot of African-American people have similar surnames.
Mm-hmm.
Johnston, Jackson.
Son of Jack.
No, the name of the white slave owners.
All right, sure, yeah.
You know, Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mr. Jefferson had slaves, and he was very pro having slaves, mm-hmm. and kept slaves and impregnated and raped women, mm-hmm. black slaves. So, you know, the history of America is built
on
slaves in an Old Testament style society. It's yeah, it's speculative fiction, all right.
Yeah,
it's very exactly. close to the truth.
The exciting for me,
yeah,
because there is a movie. Despite having a stellar cast, it's not a great movie.
I loved it.
You loved it?
Oh,
okay,
look,
yeah.
I mean, I guess when it came out, I saw it when it came out, whenever that was, late
80s. It was 1990, I think.
1990? Yeah. Oh, I really loved it. I liked Natasha Richardson. May she rest in peace. Wonderful actress. Very much miss her. Talented and... No, when it came out, it was a big deal.
Yeah,
because nothing was like this with so many women characters and actors, and this type of story was revolutionary to be put on screen at the time.
And I'm certainly not trying to take away from those concepts, I think just as a film, it didn't quite come together properly. So, and it's definitely not to do with the fact there's too many women because they're fabulous.
Yeah, but I mean that many. What I'm saying is that many women in a film.
It's quite revolutionary. That's
fair. It's with a strong story like that. And Volkner Schollendorf, I mean, you know, one of those ex-East German directors, because a whole bunch of, you know, like anything in an oppressed society, the Iron Curtain, as it was called, came down, the wall came down in, you know, West Germany, separating East Germany and East Europe. And with that came a whole lot of wonderful talent. And these directors and these writers and people involved in this film, they experienced what it was like to be oppressed, living under a terrifying dictatorship in communist Eastern Germany. Let's not just say, you know, the West has terrible dictatorships and fascism. So does the communist systems that have pretty much all fallen away except for a handful. But oppression can be found on any
absolutely, because you know communism is a great concept. It's just that human nature fails
work.
It. Yeah, because of human nature. So well, white human nature. But the
well,
like
not
the
necessarily
rest,
white. Let's face
that's true.
It.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Anyway.
Men.
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Faye Dunaway. Serena Joy in the film.
Robert Duvall. Aidan Quinn. Elizabeth McGovern. There's like, the cast was fantastic.
And look at the soundtrack. Ryuichi Sakamoto. Love
him.
Okay. Who did Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Oh, that's cool.
Very kind. A very beautiful. Mm. Anyway.
But the exciting news is that they've made it into a Hula. Have made it into a TV series,
and
which is coming out in April.
It's greatly anticipated,
mostly by me.
It is. It's
April 26th, 2017 is the American release date. I don't have any information on the Australian one. From Mad Men, we have strangely on the second page, Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men.
Yep,
plays Alfred.
And Top of the Lake, isn't she in that?
Haven't seen Top of the Lake. Yeah.
Yep.
But the part that excites me is Samira Wiley from Orange is the New Black, who is my favorite part of an Orange is the New Black. It's playing Moira, which is one of the other hands people, not a handmaid, but a servant. So, yeah.
I think people are going to, if people who have not been exposed to Margaret Atwood in particular, this idea, I think they'll be a bit shocked.
Yeah.
How could this happen? Really?
Yeah, really? That's
come on, people.
Yeah.
Let's do some feminism study here.
Joseph Fiennes is also in there. It's the Commander, not the Commodore, as I said before. The Commander. So it's, you know, not a bad cast either.
It's promising and it's very timely. It's perfect.
Mm. You know. Great timing. And it's such a great story. Mm. And it's definitely, if you haven't read the book, I really recommend reading the book. And if you haven't read Oryx and Crake, you need to read Oryx and Crake. It's
like her name keeps popping up, Margaret Atwood. Like just a very smart, very talented,
absolutely.
Gifted icon, you know.
Another book that we, or yeah, book and movies at time is Fahrenheit 451, which is definitely about the control of knowledge, which is definitely through Trump's lies that are pretty much hourly. He's definitely trying to control knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Book burning, things like that.
Fahrenheit 451, it was the temperature at which freedom burns is one of the captions for that film.
Oh, okay.
Which is a great concept. But it's 451 is the temperature at which paper spontaneously combusts.
Mm.
So,
and Ray Bradbury, of course, the original author for it.
And if you go back,
published in the 50s, so 1953, the time of the, of course, serious book burning in the US, and we saw the Senate and congressional, you know, hunting out the communists in Hollywood, and also the Korean War was on, and North Korean War and South Korean War, and another one of those American wars, their involvement and things. I'm thinking of the Francois Truffaut film, 1966.
I've only seen the American version.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But also, if you get a chance, what's really good, and I can't recommend it more highly, is the BBC radio dramatization. There is actually records of that. You can actually find it online. It's just wonderful.
That
really engaging. Like, there's nothing like a really good audio series from, about a wonderful classical book like Fahrenheit 451. It will certainly intrigue you and draw you in. I definitely recognize it. Yes, that's a Freudian slip.
Well, just the one, dear.
just the one of many in this podcast. Now, I'm going to jump ahead because... Yeah. Oh, you wanted to say more about...
No, I'm good. I'm fine. I was just going to jump ahead to something else, so you jump ahead first.
Oh, Blindness. The film from 2008, based on the book by Jose Saramago, who sadly passed away a couple of years ago. I've read the book. The book is outstanding and absolutely creepy. I don't know what's been lost in translation, but anyway, fantastic. But the Brazilian-Canadian film version for 2008,
I loved it.
Merciless. Yeah. It's very confronting. People wake up, don't they? A virus.
It is a virus that causes blindness, except for in a few people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happens to society when no one can see?
Well, that's it.
That's not a metaphor, by the way.
Those people who start going blind first are put into concentration camps, essentially.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. And to keep away from the rest of society. And so the main character, played by Julianne Moore, I can't remember the character's name, fakes blindness to get into this place with her husband to keep her husband safe.
It's a really disturbing film.
But
really
Julianne Moore, lover. Mark Ruffalo, fantastic. Yeah. Gail Garcia Bernal.
Menacing and creepy.
Yeah. Danny Glover.
Wonderful.
Yoshino Kimura, who I can't remember but still love the name, and Alice Braga. So it's got like this amazing cast as well. Yeah, I could watch anything with Gail Garcia Bernal.
It's hard to watch, but it's really,
I absolutely
really
loved it.
And the book.
I want to read the book now. I didn't even realize it was a book.
He's an author. He's Jose Saramago, very famous. I believe he was Portuguese, so Brazilian Portuguese. No, Portuguese. But of course, in Brazil, they speak Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So it did well over there and passed away in 2010.
That's a shame.
Yeah, some very strong political views, clearly. Mm. The referencing and metaphors that he's making about government and what they do to people who they don't want. people that are disposable, and we are seeing that happening as we speak here in Australia, and of course most recently with the outrageous ban on Muslims entering the country and immigration issues in the US. So
unless they come from a country where Trump does business, then they're fine.
Yeah, I think he does business with some of those places. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well,
Saudi Arabia's all right, isn't it?
We'll pass on
that one.
I'm not going to go into details because we've actually run out of time, which is strange for a podcast, but we have to get out of the studio. The Chrysalids, which I haven't heard of, but I'm definitely going to try and check out. A Clockwork Orange, which you could definitely see happening. Hunger Games.
The series of
easily
books. Brilliant.
I love Hunger Games.
And young people can read that. No worries. No problems.
I'd probably say 12 and up, as with my teacher on for a second.
Really?
Another book I haven't read, but an interesting, Uglies, which is about plastic surgery and forced plastic surgery to make everybody look pretty. So that's, I think that's not that far off, to be honest.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
If you look
yeah.
at in media.
Antiviral would be another one yeah. in that respect. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's about injecting yourself with the virus celebrity of a celebrity.
Viruses. Yeah. That's,
so you that's, can get closer to their weird. Experience. Yeah. Very weird, but it is a Cronenberg. Well, it's Cronenberg's
right.
son
right.
who made that. So
is it good?
Yes.
Okay. I know it's on very sick. It's on Netflix, I think, so I might watch that. All right. We have to get out of the studio. Otherwise, people are going to look at us grumpy.
grumpy Trumpy.
Yep.
Can't have that. Yeah, so look, we certainly do stand against what is happening in the US and
absolutely.
Anything that involves oppressing people even further and marginalizing people even more and deciding the fate of people who are totally have, you know, cause and do no harm. And that is immigration is built. I mean, America's built on immigration.
Absolutely. I believe at some point they think their big statue that they love says, "We give us your weak and
Statue of Liberty."
That's yep, one. Yeah. Yeah. No, I knew it. I just didn't bother saying it. Give us your weak, your basically give us your marginalized people and we'll help them.
Of course.
Unless they're.
It's the smartest thing to do. Yeah. It's the only thing to do. Let's remember that. So this has been Dystrumpia. We hope it doesn't remain Dystrumpia, but. Yes, hashtag Dystrumpia, hashtag Sci-Fi and Scream Undead. Keep listening and keep fighting those who will oppress.
Hopefully we will not be others. Dead by the time the next podcast comes up.
Hopefully we won't be assassinated by the by morons.
Yes. All right, you have been listening to Sci-Fi and Scream Undead. I am Clayton Wimshurst, Clay Talks, and she is...
leaving the studio. Sonia Hammer.
Sonia Hammer. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I had another name, but it's forbidden now. So many things are forbidden now.
I know this must feel very strange. But ordinary is just what you're used to.
My name is Offred, and I intend to survive.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.